KALW.
We are witnessing what can only be described as a human rights disaster in California prisons, and there is nothing about this disaster that was not foreseeable.
The cases of COVID-19 at San Quentin State Prison surpass 1,000.
All of this is coming against the backdrop of already deep-seated vulnerabilities coming together to create a perfect storm and to put lives at risk.
We talked to a law professor who's been following the outbreak. Then we'll return to San Francisco's backyard for the next installment of the Golden Gate Parkcast, where we'll meet some of the park's hairiest denizens.
27 is Bellatrix, 38 is Buttercup, and then the last one is Bambi.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. We start today in Marin, where the outbreak of COVID-19 at San Quentin State Prison has surpassed 1,000 positive cases, including more than 100 prison workers who tested positive. The outbreak is especially personal for us here at Cross Currents because we teach and work with men there as part of a program funded by the state prisons. The outbreak happened after a transfer of prisoners from Chino. And as the state manages this crisis, people in the criminal justice field have been sounding the alarm about possible prison breakouts since April. Like Hadar Aviram. She's a law professor at UC Hastings specializing in criminal justice, and she's been following the COVID outbreak in prison closely. I called her up and first asked her about a letter she wrote to Governor Gavin Newsom nearly 3 months ago. Back in April, you wrote to Governor Newsom sounding the alarm about what could happen if COVID hit the prison system, especially in regards to what you called the appalling health conditions in prisons. The Supreme Court called it that, actually. As you see the news today, I mean, you must feel like I was trying to tell you guys. What were you worried about at the time? And is what's happening now what you predicted?
We are witnessing what can only be described as a human rights disaster in California prisons. And there is nothing about this disaster that was not foreseeable. California prisons have unique vulnerabilities, which is why we are seeing this virus now ravaging California prisons. We're hearing about the tragedies in San Quentin, but it's not the only ones. We're seeing this across the prison system. There is nothing here that was unexpected, and my colleagues and I had pointed this out numerous times. Specifically with regard to California, we have a very unique history with regard to prison healthcare and the ways that we've tried to alleviate that over the years that have made our prisons uniquely vulnerable to this kind of risk. I think a good way to think about this is to look at this through sort of a triggers and vulnerabilities perspective. That the trigger, of course, is the pandemic and multiple things that have happened, you know, in terms of mismanaging things and botched transfers between prisons. But all of this is coming against the backdrop of already deep-seated vulnerabilities, healthcare deficiencies, the way we house and populate our prisons, the way we calculate overcrowding. All of these things coming together to create a perfect storm and to put lives at risk.
As of Tuesday, 1,080 prisoners have tested positive for COVID-19 at San Quentin, as well as 102 employees. That's double the number from the previous week. Last month, there were zero. Can you tell us about that botched transfer that you were talking about from Chino? What happened?
Sure. So as far as we know, the botched transfer consisted of people being moved from the California Institute of Men, which is in Chino, which was seeing a huge outbreak and still is actually grappling with big numbers of people who are still sick there and were not tested, or were tested back where they were still in Chino and not tested or quarantined upon arrival to San Quentin. And this is one of the risks, of course. We're now seeing, if I'm looking at the picture of what prisons look like overall, there are prisons that have not been infected by the pandemic. But of course, the minute you introduce people from the outside, be it staff, be it inmates, people that are not tested or quarantined, you run the risk that things are going to run amok. Now, what's especially interesting about San Quentin is that we're seeing the virus spread very quickly, not just among general population, but even on death row. And keep in mind that on death row in Quentin, people are housed in single cells. So if the virus is infecting people there and ravaging people, You know, think about how little social distancing you can do everywhere else in the prison where people are not doing time in single cells. The combination of the botched transfer and the already, you know, problematic setup of the prison that doesn't really allow any social distancing to speak of.
Mm. And San Quentin had its first death row death from COVID as well. Can you talk about the CDCR tracker that you did a deep dive into? So CDCR, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, they have a COVID tracking tool. How reliable is their tracking and what are you learning from it?
I actually want to really commend CDCR for the tracking tool because it's excellent. They don't only track infections, they track how many people are still in custody, how many released, how many have recovered. Mostly for the prisoners, they also have a separate page for the staff. And they're also tracking very carefully their percentage of testing. One only wishes that the way they address the actual pandemic was as competent as the way that they're tracking it on the tracker. And the tracker gives us a perspective not only on what's going on at this moment, just kind of like a snapshot of what's happening in prisons, but also over time, how this disease is migrating from prison to prison. The other amazing thing about having this information is that it allows us to take this information and cross it with what we know about the surrounding counties. And this is really crucial to understand. A lot of the commentary that I'm seeing about what's happening in prisons now are looking at prisons as if they're separate from the community. Prisons are not separate from the community. They are part of the community by virtue of staff coming in and out of prisons. And by doing an analysis comparing the data from the LA Times about county infections, I'm noticing that when there are spikes in a particular prison, you see very shortly after, again, I can't tell you an airtight causal story because we don't have contact tracing, but very shortly after, you see spikes in the surrounding county. And this is not a big surprise, right? The staff will leave. You know, they shop on the way home. They eat on the way home. You know, of course, whatever happens in prisons is also going to impact the surrounding community.
Mm. We started this interview with your letter from back in April warning about all of this. If you were writing a letter today, what would you say to Governor Newsom? What needs to happen now?
So I am getting lots of emails from Governor Newsom and communications in which he's addressing his fellow Californians. And he's saying to us, do your part, wear your mask, you know, socially distance, stay at home, do your part to prevent the spread. What I would like to say to the governor now is it's not important who's to blame. It's important what's going to happen now. It's triage time. Do your part. Let people go home out of public health considerations, not out of the optics of what it looks like. A quarter of the California prison population is people who are aged 50 and up. These people have spent decades in prison. They are old. They are sick. The risk that they pose to public safety is zero, regardless of what they were sentenced for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. These people belong at home. Ramp up the testing. Find out what's going on. For heaven's sake, no more transfers to places that don't have cases. This only ends in tragedy. All of this effort, all of this sacrifice that everybody who is listening to us is putting in, wearing masks, distancing yourselves, you know, taking care of your kids without childcare, all of this enormous effort that everybody's doing for 3 months, this is completely worthless if we're incubating this disease in dozens of places in our communities.
And do you think that's likely to happen?
I very much hope so. I really hope that the publicity now is moving the needle. I'm very frustrated that when the time was to make, you know, well-organized decisions about this, which is 3 months ago when we were all writing and warning about this, we didn't get any traction. It's very hard to get traction these days if you're right too early. But we were right then and we're right now. And there are still things that we can do now that can save lives. And I implore anybody with the power to do something to do them right now.
Okay, Hadar Aviram, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Hadar Aviram, a law professor at UC Hastings, specializing in criminal justice. You can hear the rest of our conversation at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now let's go to a different place, a place to let ourselves wander, relax, and explore. It's a new edition of the Golden Gate Parkcast. We're starting here at the ponds of the Golden Gate Casting and Angling Club. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump to our next stop. No need to hurry. We can take a closer look at our surroundings. A much closer look. Check out this bee. It's always nice to stop and smell the flowers in Golden Gate Park. This is the Golden Gate Parkcast. I'm your host, Hannah Baba. We've been walking on all kinds of surfaces. Pavement, of course, dirt trails, grass. Right now, we're on a gravel road. As we approach John F. Kennedy Boulevard, again, we come across a site you won't find on any map, but one that locals return to every year. There's a patch of cherry blossom trees. Beautiful, for sure, but they're not the draw, actually. Beside them, about 30 feet up one of the park's majestic tall trees, there's a nest, a great horned owl nest. Year after year, the owls return to the same spot, and year after year, bird watchers return to see them. Get lucky, and you might catch the majestic sight of one of the parents swooping in towards their home. And if you crane your neck, you might see their fuzzy, cream-colored offspring peeking out. So cute. Right now, though, we're crossing the street to see some much bigger creatures. Much, much bigger. We're going to the bison paddock. For well over a century, Golden Gate Park has hosted a herd of these 900-pound hoofed and hairy beasts. They were originally brought in as part of a nationwide conservation effort. So why are they still here? Laura Cliven's got some answers from people who care for the bison in their home on the west side of the park.
16 here is Betsy, 38 is Buttercup, and then the last one is Bambi.
That's Sarah King, and she could be listing off a series of Disney characters, but she's actually introducing me to a herd of 8 furry bison in Golden Gate Park.
I'm a hoofstock person, so I like the big hooved animals.
King is employed by the San Francisco Zoo to be the primary bison keeper here. She works with fellow hoofstock fan, Jim Nappy.
I'm Jim Nappy. I'm curator of hoofstock and marsupials at San Francisco Zoo. We love bison.
We do.
They are kind of like your children. You know, you take care of them, and there's a lot of pride in that.
They might look friendly, but these bison are definitely not docile.
I think people write these guys off like they're just a bunch of cows, and we have to remember they're not domestic. They're still wild. They act wild. These animals are extremely stubborn and very smart.
So they're not your average cow, and they're not your average buffalo either, although the words are often used interchangeably.
The buffalo was food, clothing, shelter, sport, trade goods, and every utensil.
Buffalo live in Africa and Asia, but bison are native to North America. They also have smaller horns and bigger humps and faces than buffalo. And
their fur is so dense that snow can actually settle on top of it and not melt. So that's why they are perfect for the Great Plains area.
So what are they doing in the moderate climate of San Francisco? Nappy says the bison were brought to Golden Gate Park back in 1892. But to understand why, you have to go back even further.
From Pennsylvania to the Rockies, and from the Great Slave Lake to the Rio Grande, the herds were growing when the Spaniards saw them in 1521. 60 million and growing. This was the New World.
There were so many bison that when Lewis and Clark crossed the U.S. in the early 1800s, they wrote that, quote, "the moving multitude darkened the whole plains." For the Native Americans, bison were central to their livelihoods. But then, the U.S. frontier moved west. Bison numbers started dropping dramatically from overhunting and disease. Businesses advertised bison hunting competitions, and settlers intentionally killed bison to limit Native American resources.
And soon the railroads came. They brought gentlemen hunters who slew for so-called sport. They brought hunters who killed for tongues alone. And they brought hide hunters with their skinners. The prairies began to rot with wasted carcasses.
You know, when there's 30 million of one type of animal, and within, you know, a 100-year period, there's only several thousand, there's a problem.
By the late 1800s, the number of bison bottomed out at about 1,000. It was then that independent organizations began placing small herds in zoos and private farms across the country.
San Francisco was an area that was identified as a place that could house bison, and that's what they did. At that time, they just offered big fields, big pastures, and they just drew a lot of animals in there and said, let's just let these guys breed, let's improve, you know, their numbers, get the population up to help with the conservation effort.
Efforts like this, plus a commercial boom for bison meat, slowly brought numbers back up to about 500,000 today. Most of these bison live in captivity, except for a large, free-roaming herd in Yellowstone National Park. Jim Nappy says the San Francisco bison contributed directly to the conservation movement. Overall, 100 calves were born in the bison paddock as people lined John F. Kennedy Drive to watch.
And each spring, new herds rumbled out of a legendary cavern and covered the land with abundance.
Today, the bison in Golden Gate Park are no longer breeding. But don't worry, they'll be around for a while. Six of the all-female herd were brought in as calves in 2011, and the other two are in their 20s, while the herd's matriarch just died at age 30. Over the years, these bison have come to mean many different things to San Franciscans, like the high schoolers who would let them out as their senior prank, or the Native Americans who held their ceremonies here. But for those who know their story, they are a reminder of this city's role in preserving a character from our past.
They're part of the history of that effort and those efforts that we continue with other animal species, and I think the park represents that with bison. It's a good story.
That piece was produced by Laura Clivens. It's part of our podcast made in honor of Golden Gate Park's 150th anniversary. You can subscribe to the Golden Gate Park cast to listen to every episode on the tour. Find it at klw.org/subscribe. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area authors have had to cancel launch parties and book tours because of the coronavirus, so we're bringing them to you in a series we're calling New Arrivals. Today we hear from San Francisco author Jamal Yogis reading from his new children's picture book, Mop Rides the Waves of Life. The main character, Mop, has huge curly hair and loves to surf. He learns to ride his emotions like he rides waves in the ocean. Here's Jamal.
One of my favorite parts is when Mop's mom is teaching him mindful breathing and says, when a scary, sad, mad, grouchy wave catches you in its grip, that's okay. Falling is the best way to learn. And the illustrator Matt Allen shows Mop upside down on this super gnarly wave. And I love it because it's such an important mindset for adults and kids. After the surf, Friday started out cool. Miss Grickle said my drawing of farm animals on Mars was extremely creative. Then we played sharks and minnows, and Sammy and I were the last minnows in the whole class. I wasn't just surfing Friday, I was shredding it. Until I got a math problem wrong, and Izzy shouted, Mop looks like Albert Einstein, but he's not smart. Everyone laughed. I wanted to break something. I wanted to crawl in a hole and sob. But I didn't. I felt my breathing in and out like the tides. I remembered angry waves are natural. I tried to see the anger as a wave. I saw I had a choice.
That was Jamal Yogis reading from his new book, Mop Rides the Waves of Life. You can find more information on that book and more at klw.org/newarrivals. And tune in tomorrow at 5. Bookstore supporters rally to save their beloved independence.
I guess we're symbolic of civilization not falling to pieces. That feels kind of good that people think that.
Supporting small businesses tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. And before we go, let's listen to some new music from a local artist. This is Oakland artist Bay Lou featuring Manny Draper from Richmond. Their new track, Uneven, was produced by Noel Bronzini.
I guess we'll lay here, even if we don't want to. The secrets we keep, even if we don't want to. Cause this is swept up, that is swept up. Strange fruit, something kinda rotten. If hope is a fountain,
today's Cross Currents team includes Vivian Bossieu-Skinner, Janae Darden, Sarah Lai Sterling, Lisa Morehouse, and Marissa Ortega-Welch. Our engineers are Tariq Foda and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Doesn't want me monetizing anguish. Hope you feel comfy. No access, no resources.